Kind of getting our land legs back. Every time I sit down or stand up, everything shifts. Here's what it says. Cruising is nice, so they say. Cruising took Mikey away, but this evening at last he returns to kick ass. Oh joy, oh Kalu and Kalay. A limerick from the Music Factory. Well, hello, True Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. Yeah, we had a great time. Many thanks to Johnny Wendell, Sam Cedar, and Peter Werby for covering for us while we were on the Truth Seeker cruise, and it was just an extraordinary experience. Thanks to all the 70-plus fans who left the country with us for a week, and special thanks to Dana Carson, who acted as our unofficial Truth Seeker cruise director during the trip, and he's quite a dancer, too. No, he didn't dance with me. We had, I'm just talking about this for a second, then we'll move on, because I realize we have at least 200 listeners and only 70 went on the trip. So the other 130 people are going to, you know, after about 2 minutes of this, they're going to say, well, dumbass Malloy program tonight, let's go, he's just talking about that trip. We had a great time. It was just absolutely astoundingly wonderful. To everybody that came on that trip, thank you so much. We had a couple of get-togethers, three, I think, all together, plus, you know, just the spending time together on the boat or when we ran into each other. There were trips into the various ports and beyond, and it was just a great time. I don't know how other people talk about cruises that they go on with folks who are kind enough to listen to their program, but to me, it was just a massively exhilarating experience. And I have to say that my three-year-old conducted herself pretty well, too. She had a couple of meltdowns, but usually we would hustle her into the stateroom and beat her with empty wine bottles to get her to... No, just kidding. But anyway, we met some wonderful, wonderful people. We're talking about doing this again. If we ever do it again, I'm telling you, save your money. I realize this costs some bucks to go on one of these cruises. I understand that. But I also hope that you know, folks occasionally have time for vacation. If you do, you might want to join us the next time. And it probably wouldn't be for a year, but, you know, don't miss it next time. It was just, we had a complete ball. We will probably be putting up some photos at our website, but there are already some out there. I don't know how to tell you to get to them. There are a couple of photographs of me in my bathing suit. You want to stay completely away from those on an empty stomach. So anyway, thanks to everybody who came along, and thanks to the people who substituted for us while we were gone. It was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. I could, you know, maybe later on the week I'll name some names or something. I don't know. The last night, I think it was it Friday night, which was the next to the last night, we had another get-together. And it felt like the last night of camp, right? Did you all ever go to summer camp? Sure, we did. Everybody went to summer camp, right? But the last night of camp when you have the final campfire and everybody sits around, I'm going to miss you. Hey, all right. I swear to God, all right. I'm your friend forever. You know, then you get back from camp. You can't even remember a person's name 2 weeks later. Well, that's not how this happened, but it was kind of that way. So anyway, one last time. Thanks to everybody. It was an absolute hoot. If you've been following the news, and for a week I did not, the only thing I was aware of that occurred, on board they had a minimal satellite television, and they had CNNI, CNN International. And the day that Al Gore won his share of the Nobel Peace Prize because of his work on global warming, we got that information. And I specifically and deliberately did not get involved with any news. They had a daily onboard New York Times summary that was available, and I said, no, I just don't want any part of it, and didn't. And it was just bizarre after a while to be so, you know, totally cut off by choice from what was going on. But we'll talk a little bit tonight, I think, about the Al Gore situation. That is really driving these right-wing half-asses just totally insane, isn't it? If for no other reason, I'm glad he won for that. Just pushing these rat bastards right over the edge, huh? These right-wingers, they're going crazy! Oh, the Nobel Prize has been cheapened. Peace, blah, 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 blah. It's been politicized. Hey, you dumb bastards. How about 1968? Henry Kissinger and Lay Ducto. They got the Peace Prize. And then we had another 6 years of war. Except Lay Ducto said, no, I don't want it because my country is at war. But Henry Kissinger sucked it up like a vacuum sweeper.
I have a Peace Prize now. Jawohl.
To the right-wingers who can't stand Al Gore winning a Nobel Peace Prize, oh, bite me. Why don't all you people just... I'll tell you what. Take a cruise to Mexico, and when you're about 12, 14 nautical miles offshore, jump overboard! We have a water crisis here in Georgia. That has really gotten to critical proportions while we were gone. Matter of fact, many parts of the Southeast, certainly Atlanta, this is a city of 5 million, metro area 5 million. And the two main lakes that supply our water supply, Lake Lanier and Lake Allatoona, there's a clear possibility that they may run dry within the next 90 days. That's what they're talking about here. Now, this is a potential crisis of astoundingly bad possibilities. You know, we came back into this. When we left, I mean, hell, we haven't been gone for a year. We were gone for 10 damn days. We knew there was a water crisis here. But here's the interesting part to me. How do the members of Congress? The senators and representatives from Georgia, Democrats and Republicans, react to this crisis. Well, the first thing that I've heard that they've tried to do here is suspend the Endangered Species Act so that protected areas can be drained, A, B, and so that downstream in Florida Panhandle, where water winds up that is released by the Corps of Engineers out of these two lakes, that water won't go there anymore. Now, one of the reasons, that the water is released is to protect a couple of endangered marine species. So, what is the first reaction to the Democrats from the Democrats and Republican senators and representatives from Georgia? Suspend the Endangered Species Act. Not a single word about suspending building and development, which is why Atlanta finds itself in this position. It's not because we are in the middle of a drought. It is because this area was never designed to support 5 million people. Never, ever. At the very max, maybe 2 million. At the max. There has never been conscientiously applied systematic ideas of conservation to water resources here, or you know what, any place else in America. It's always been build, build, build. These freaking developers couldn't care less. So here we are. How about Phoenix? How about L.A.? How about Salt Lake City? How about Detroit? How about Chicago? You see? Nah, keep building. If we run into a water crisis, we'll suspend the Endangered Species Act. By God, that'll work. So that's what we're doing here in Atlanta. Even John Lewis, the sainted John Lewis, called everybody into his office. That's where they met. That's where all these Republican Nazis from Georgia, including real goose-stepping, swastika-wearing freaks like this Gingrey guy and Jesus. I'm into it already, aren't I? I need a vacation. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Why not they pay paradise to put up a parking lot? They pay paradise and put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. No.
Think of anything more logical and more commonsensical than to understand our hemisphere.
Around the golden sun, we are a billion children rolled into one. So when I hear about
it, is 21 past the hour. And let me nip something in the bud quickly here, because I just don't want to get into it on the telephone. A lot of wild rumors about Randy Rhodes today, and that's exactly what they are. It's my understanding that more than a few people have let their imaginations run wild in mainstream media and across the internet. She had a fall. She's recovering, and she hopes to be back on the air later this week. That's the extent of it. Okay? Everybody can just take a deep breath. The report that went out there initially was wrong. And because we're also paranoid, we are, this thing took on a life of its own, and it has shocked the hell out of Randy Rhodes. Like, oh my God. Well, she didn't say it that way. It's like, oh my God, what were they saying about me? She fell down and severely hurt her mouth. She was not attacked. She was not mugged. No right-wing cabal of muggers jumped out from behind a building in the Murray Hill section of Manhattan, for God's sake, and attacked her. It did not occur. Have you never fallen down? I have. Friday a week ago, there was a huge rally in San Diego to keep KLSD, providing liberal left talk radio. And I didn't know anything about it. I wouldn't have been there anyway because we were out and about on a boat. But I understand that there were many speakers there. Stacey Taylor, who is a local progressive radio champion, is how he how he's described. He went into detail about his life in radio and the conservative corporate grip we're all being strangled by. Mike Aguirre, I know I'm mispronouncing that. He's the described as the firebrand rebel city attorney. He was there. Former Navy SEAL Mike Lumpkin, Gene Crescenza, former congressional candidate, Bree Walker, who I met on my last trip to San Diego, who does a talk show in L.A. but lives in San Diego, was there, and it was. It was quite an event, and the reason I mention it is because when we were in San Diego two nights ago, we listened to KLSD, as a matter of fact, we were there Sunday afternoon, was it, Kathy, and listened to a rebroadcast of a Tom Hartman program. I guess it was rebroadcast, right? I don't think he's live on Sunday. Great station, sounded clear as a bell, KLSD AM 1360 in San Diego. I hope the efforts by people in that city to keep progressive talk on the air succeeds or succeed. I truly do. It'd be a shame to lose San Diego. Beautiful city. What else we have here? There's just so much. I'd get back and find out that retired Army Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, who commanded U.S. forces in Iraq for the first year of the occupation, is blaming incompetence by Bush's national security team for creating this horror that is now our involvement in Iraq and could go on for, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. I think the left wing of the political spectrum, the liberals, all just went just utterly almost ecstatic. Here's Sanchez. When I first heard about it, I thought, oh, good. Sanchez said, Robert Perry is writing in the Consortium News, Sanchez used October 12th, a speech to a conference of military reporters and editors in Arlington, Virginia, to castigate nearly everyone connected to the Iraq war, including the U.S. news media, Congress, State Department, the White House, and the Pentagon. He said, quote, "There has been a glaring, unfortunate display of incompetence in strategic leadership among our national leaders. They have unquestionably been derelict in the performance of their duty. In my profession, these types of leaders would be immediately relieved or court-martialed," end quote. Now, as Perry points out, even though Sanchez didn't criticize Bush by name, he left little doubt that he placed most of the blame on this administration's top leadership, particularly the National Security Council, which is led by Bush and is under the day-to-day direction of Rice until her elevation to Secretary of State a couple of years ago. But he goes on and on and on and on and on, as Sanchez does in this this diatribe about the the incompetent leadership provided by the Bush crime family where it concerned this war. But if you take a closer look at what Sanchez is saying, which is what Michael Roberts did. Michael Roberts is a political strategist. He has his own website. He's an experienced writer. And I want to share with you when we come back what he said about Sanchez's rant. It may surprise you. Stick around. I'm Mike Molloy. God, I need a vacation.
And now, the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Molloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. The Sanchez thing, now that I've had a chance to take a look at it and try to understand what this man said, it's really gotten an attitude of weirdness to it. Robert Perry, writing at consortiumnews.com, quotes a lot of the speech, but so does Michael Roberts, writing at opednews.com. And Perry says Sanchez declined to call Bush's decision to invade in March 2003 a mistake, and argued that the United States has no alternative now but to continue fighting in Iraq, even if there's little prospect for success. Sanchez said, in an apparent reference to Bush's decision to surge U.S. troops this year, Sanchez said, quote, "Continued manipulations and adjustments to our military strategy will not achieve victory. The best we can do with this flawed approach is to stave off defeat." He goes on to say, "The administration, Congress, and the entire interagency structure, especially the State Department, must shoulder the responsibility for this catastrophic failure, and the American people must hold them accountable." And then he says, "There's no question in America is living a nightmare with no end in sight." He goes on to say, he lashes out at what he calls partisan politics. Sanchez called for congressional bipartisanship and continued support for the troops in the field, but Sanchez presented no clear-cut plan for how to turn the Iraq war disaster around. And then he said, Quote, there is nothing going on today in Washington that would give us hope. Our commanders on the ground will continue to make progress and provide for the development of a grand, provide time for the development of a grand strategy. That will be wasted effort, as we have seen repeatedly since 2003. In the meantime, our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines will continue to die. End quote. And when you first read this, you think, oh boy, here's somebody who's really... But don't forget who Sanchez is. He's the rat bastard who oversaw the Abu Ghraib situation. He's the rat bastard that in his tirade the other day never once mentioned the fascist leadership of his boss, Rumsfeld, or the involvement in the Pentagon. For Christ's sake, what does this man think? Who does he think is doing the fighting over there? Condoleezza Rice? No. Mr. Sanchez, since you're retired now, you were handling the fighting, and your boss. So here's what Michael Roberts says. Sanchez delivered an angry, militaristic, and deeply disturbing tirade to participants at the Military Reporters and Editors Annual Conference in Arlington, Virginia. Sanchez chose this setting to spew venom at the Bush administration, the media, and what he believed was hindering the successful prosecution of the war in Iraq. Roberts goes on to say, while the mainstream media cherry-picked the "Iraq is a nightmare" soundbite to play over and over again, it failed to analyze the deep anti-democratic and pronounced authoritarianism that was the very essence of the speech. Sanchez covered up his call for an America that is dominated and controlled by the military by blaming the failures in Iraq on the media, saying that it was driven to, quote, unscrupulous reporting and agenda-driven biases. Huh? Sanchez, you remember, was forced to resign over allegations that he sanctioned and was aware of methods of torture at Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison that ran counter to the Geneva Convention on the Rules of War. Sanchez, in his speech the other day, according to Michael Roberts, took no blame for the Iraqi cesspool, but was quite liberal with his castigations and criticisms of everyone else. He started by blaming what he called, quote, the corrosive partisan politics that was destroying and killing our service members who are at war, that along with the media was making things in Iraq very difficult, end quote. While Sanchez speaks about American democracy, this statement clearly points to his belief that war and democracy, even at home, cannot operate together. Roberts goes on with this. Continuing down this militaristic authoritarian path, Sanchez all but called for more press censorship than what already occurs by saying, quote, as I assess various media entities, some are unquestionably engaged in political propaganda that is uncontrolled, end quote. Now, Truth Seekers, let me pause for Michael Roberts' assessment. Who would that be? The only media entity that is engaged in political propaganda that is uncontrolled is Fox News. And it is 100% pro-war and death and destruction. So who's Sanchez talking about? Back to Michael Roberts. Michael Roberts says he, Sanchez, seemed to suggest that the only basis for waging successful war in Iraq and beyond was some form of military rule at home, when he declared, quote, as we all know, war is an extension of politics, and when a nation goes to war, it must bring to bear all elements of power in order to win. War fighting is not solely the responsibility of the military commander, unless he has been given the responsibility and resources to synchronize the political, economic, and informational power of the nation, end quote. Do you realize what this guy is saying? War fighting is not solely the responsibility of the military commander unless he has been given the responsibility to control everything else inside the country. Now, if that's not militaristic, pro-authoritarian, if not pro-fascist, what is? Michael Roberts goes on, justifiably attacking the Bush administration, but for all the wrong reasons, Sanchez called the administration's war strategy, quote, a nightmare with no end in sight, end quote. For those in both the Republican and Democratic parties that had been clamoring for a more get-tough policy in Iraq, this was great news. And the 2008 presidential hopefuls immediately pounced on this as proof that we need to change our course in Iraq. They, the Republican and Democratic leadership or presidential candidates, also chortled with glee when Sanchez leveled a broadside against the surge, saying, quote, "The latest revised strategy is a desperate attempt by an administration that has not accepted the political and economic realities of this war, and they have definitely not communicated that reality to the American people," end quote. Of course, everyone conveniently ignored the other parts of the speech, the media focused on the criticisms of the Bush administration. But you see, Sanchez also chided the media for being unpatriotic when he commented on the Abu Ghraib debacle, where the media exposed torture methods banned by the Geneva Convention that cost Sanchez another command and ultimately having to retire from the army. This is how he put it in his speech, quote, "Over the course of this war, tactically insignificant events have become strategic defeats for America because of the tremendous power and impact of the media and, by extension, you, the journalist. In many cases, the media has unjustly destroyed the individual reputations and careers of those involved," end quote. Now, the insignificant events, according to Sanchez, includes a list of interrogation or torture and other practices that are illegal. Such arrogance and might is always right attitude is indicative of the Republican and Bush administration's approach to international laws and procedures. Sanchez does not want to be encumbered by such insignificant things like torture, murder, slaughter of noncombatants, renditions, torture camps, hidden hidey holes where people are destroyed slowly. Sanchez is a goddamn fascist! But the media immediately goes for the easy soundbite. Oh, Sanchez really got in Bush's case. Yeah! Without going ahead and telling you that what Sanchez wanted was more control, more militarism, more war, less dissent. According to Michael Roberts, not the guy from Seinfeld, his rant also brought out the smoldering conflicts within the top military brass and the civilian leadership. Sanchez's hardline right-wing speech demonstrated his alignment with the more dictatorial elements within the military, now locked in a low-level friction with an increasingly small section of the officer corps who still believe in the United States Constitution and the subordination of the military to civilian authority. Sanchez doesn't believe that! Noteworthy in Sanchez's speech, Michael Roberts writes, is his broad carpet-bombing attack on the entire civilian Bush administration, the State Department, the Congress, both political parties, and the media, while saying very little, if anything, about the Pentagon's role in the war that he never criticized once. Now, here is what he did say in criticizing the conduct of the Iraq War and the present state of affairs. This is Sanchez, quote, "Who will demand accountability for the failure of our national political leadership involved in the management of this war? They have unquestionably been derelict in the performance of their duty. In my profession, these types of leaders would immediately be relieved or court-martialed." Relieved or court-martialed. Clearing away the emotions, Michael Roberts writes, revealed the bitter, hard bent of a man whose words could easily be interpreted as obliquely calling for a coup d'etat, because the only section of the American ruling class with the capability of running both the nation and waging war is the top brass of the United States military. And this is all the more alarming given the increased role that the military now plays in everyday life, American life, and its ever-growing importance in civilian matters under the Bush administration. Just Michael Roberts writes, just like General Sanchez and cut from the same bowl of cloth as the outgoing chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Peter Pace, who pointedly stated when asked about the popular opposition to the war in Iraq that, quote, people cannot vote an end to the war, end quote. You can't vote an end to a war? Well, I hope you will reconsider. Go to opednews.com and find Behind the Sanchez Rant and read it.
Border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It's about 9 minutes before the hour. The I don't know if you saw this or not, but this is what the news report says. Just days after former Vice President Al Gore received the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts on global warming, the United States Supreme Court has handed Mr. Gore a stunning reversal, stripping him of his Nobel and awarding it to President George W. Bush instead. For Mr. Gore, who basked in the adulation of the Nobel Committee and the world, the High Court's decision to give his prize to President Bush was a cruel twist of fate, to say the least, but in a 5-4 decision, the justices made it clear that they had taken the unprecedented step of stripping Mr. Gore of his Nobel because President Bush deserved it more. Justice Antonin Scalia, writing for the majority, said, quote, it is true that Al Gore has done a lot of talking about global warming, but President Bush has actually helped create global warming, end quote. And then it goes on to say, even as Mr. Gore is being stripped of his Nobel, he received strong words of support from Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, who said that the former vice president's Nobel win, quote, shows that he is devoting his life to the right thing and should definitely stay the course, end quote. Whew. In an interview with reporters in Iowa, Senator Clinton said that, quote, Al Gore should remain dedicated to the cause of global climate change at least through November of 2008, end quote. And this is reported by Andy Borowitz. The Borowitz report. Oh God! The Supreme Court took it and gave it to Bush. Yeah. Well, why not? And the right wing is just frothing at the mouth, aren't they? Over Al Gore's win, if that's the right word, I don't think it is, being awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Here's what the National Review that really went after Gore about the Peace Prize, the National Review, the whole right wing, Wall Street editorial page. The drug-addicted pig that's on every day from noon to 3 Eastern Time, border, coast to coast, all of them have just gone absolutely apoplectic. But this is what the National Review wrote a few months after Martin Luther King Jr. won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964. Here's what they wrote, quote, for years now, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and his associates have been deliberately undermining the foundations of internal order in this country. With their rabble-rousing demagoguery, they have been cracking the cake of custom that holds us together. With their doctrine of civil disobedience, they have been teaching hundreds of thousands of Negroes, particularly the adolescents and the children, that it is perfectly all right to break the law and defy constitutional authority if you are a Negro with a grievance, in protest against injustice. And they have done more than talk. They have on occasion after occasion, in almost every part of the country, called out their mobs on the streets, promoted school strikes, sit-ins, lie-ins, in explicit violation of the law, and in explicit defiance of the public authority. They have taught anarchy and chaos by word and deed, and no doubt with the best of intentions, and they have found apt pupils everywhere, with intentions not of the best. Sow the wind, reap the whirlwind. That was in the National Review, September 7th, 1965, titled Civil Rights and Violence, Who Are the Guilty Ones? You piece of waste. Now, the person who sent this to me, Oliver Willis, writes, the more things change, the more they change the same. Proving that conservatives are almost always on the wrong side of history. In 1965, they attacked Dr. King and civil disobedience against racist laws that were the rule of the land, laws that were morally wrong and fundamentally un-American. Is it any wonder that the same publication arguing so strongly against the man who was one of America's greatest leaders now attacks Al Gore? If the National Review had had its way, I, Oliver Willis, would be writing this on the blacks-only section of the Internet. Well, again, I take more than a middling justification in watching these right-wing pissants just go absolutely purple over Al Gore's awarding of the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, Tom sent me this. He says, I'm sending along the editorial that ran in the newspaper where I work. It's the Daily News Sun in Sun City. Is that Arizona? I guess it's Arizona. Today, he says, I think our editor borrowed it from our sister paper, the East Valley Tribune. It shows how far news media have gone, which is to say not very far at all, in understanding the threat of global warming and raising the quality of discussion on this subject. Pity the reader. Now, I'll share it with you when we come back. It's titled, Gore's Nobel Isn't So Hot. Ooh, what a keen, incisive play on words, huh? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Jesus, I need a vacation. Welcome back. It's 6 and a half past the hour. This is a quick example, not that you need it, Truth Seeker, but about how completely irresponsible this filthy, filthy right-wing media is in this country. Tom sent this to me. This is from the Daily News Sun in Sun City, Arizona. And he says, I think our editor borrowed it from our sister paper, the East Valley Tribune. It's an editorial by the pigs that own these two newspapers, and the title is Gore's Nobel Isn't So Hot. Here's what it says. Former Vice President Al Gore, who says he used to be the next president of the United States, has won the Nobel Peace Prize for advancing half-truths, errors, and politically inspired schemes about global warming. We congratulate Gore and hope it's some personal consolation. Nevertheless, we're uninspired as Gore takes his place alongside Yasser Arafat and Kofi Annan, similarly honored with credentials of similar substance. As for Gore's campaign to scare the dickens out of everyone on Earth, we're pleased to see reality catching up to his hype. The day before the prize was announced, an English judge had something to say about Gore's crowning achievement, his documentary film, An Inconvenient Truth, that claims because of global warming, humanity is sitting on a ticking time bomb. The judge said the movie has 9 major errors. Said High Court Judge Michael Burton, he ruled that teachers must alert children to the errors. The judge said Gore is wrong to claim global warming will cause sea levels to rise 20 feet, and that increases in CO2 precede warming when they come afterward. Inconvenient truths don't stop there. The Competitive Enterprise Institute, a free market think tank, has compiled point-by-point refutations of Gore's hype and alarmism. A Competitive Enterprise Institute environmental policy expert, Mario Lewis, says,
nearly every significant statement that Vice President Gore makes regarding climate science and climate policy is either one-sided, misleading, exaggerated, speculative, or wrong.
Global warming alarmism serves those opposing free market economics and its fossil fuel reliance, and those seeking to profit by gaming the system once they force rule changes. The Kyoto Protocol, which would force nations to drastically reduce CO2 emissions if enforced, would reduce projected temperatures
about 1 degree over 100 years,
while dampening economies worldwide. Worse, Gore completely ignores the benefits of a warming climate. Environmental author Bjorn Lomborg notes more lives would be saved, more crops grown, and generally more benefits received with warmer temperatures. Unfortunately, Gore's award likely will spur more alarmist momentum. My God. And Paul Krugman identifies it. He calls it the Gore derangement syndrome. On the day after Al Gore shared the Nobel Peace Prize, Wall Street Journal's editors couldn't even bring themselves to mention Gore's name. Instead, they devoted their editorial to a long list of people they thought deserved the prize more. And Gore asked the question, what is it about Mr. Gore that drives right-wingers insane? And he answers the question, partly it's a reaction to what happened in 2000. When the American people chose Gore. But the little piglet somehow ended up in the White House, you see. Both the personality cult the right tried to build around President Bush and the often hysterical denigration of Mr. Gore were, Krugman says, largely motivated by the desire to expunge the stain of illegitimacy from the Bush administration. And now that Mr. Bush has proved himself utterly the wrong man for the job, to be, in fact, the best president Al-Qaeda's recruiters could have hoped for, the symptoms of Gore derangement syndrome have grown even more extreme. And it goes on. Just go to nytimes.com and read Paul Krugman's column today. And then Robert Perry, also writing today, go to consortiumnews.com and read Why Big Media Slimes Al Gore. It just goes on and on. I don't know. This is insanity. This is just total insanity. Total insanity. Let's do a couple of phone calls here, especially on Gore. Let's start with Bruce, who is calling from California, listening on the internet. Hey, Bruce.
Mike, hi.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
We missed you. I wanted to comment on the British judge and his, quote, findings. I have a right-wing friend with whom I argue via email quite a lot. Uh-huh. And it came back and forth between us. And so I did a net search. I looked up polar bear drownings. That was 0.8 of what the judge said. According to Gore, according to the way the judge worded it, it says polar bears were being found but had actually drowned, swimming long distances up to 60 miles to find ice. and this is what the judge referred to as an error. His finding was only four polar bears have recently been found drowned because of a storm. Uh-huh. And so, you know, that was one of the claims and the thing. So what I did was I did a net search on this polar bears drowned and came up with the main article that was the source of that story.
Mm-hmm.
And the article actually reads, the new study carried out in part in the Beaufort Sea shows that between 86 and 2005, just 4% of the bears spotted off the north coast of Alaska were swimming in open waters. Not a single drowning had been documented in the area. However, last September, when the ice cap had retreated to a record 160 miles north of Alaska, 51 bears were spotted, of which 20% were seen in the open sea swimming as far as 60 miles offshore. The researchers returned to the vicinity and after a fierce storm and found four dead bears floating in the water. We estimate that on the order of 40 bears may have been swimming, and that of those, and many of those probably drowned.
Yeah.
So here's the report, you know, that many of the bears had probably drowned. They found four carcasses. The ice was 160 miles away from the coast. The bears were 60 miles out, and they did drown looking for ice.
Yeah.
And yet the judge found, so, you know, with the timing, it is so obvious to me that when a modicum of research on my part. I mean, it took me 10 minutes to find the article, if they have that long. And I just picked one of the 9 points that this judge had criticized, and it's
and found out the judge is full of bat crap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what's so pitiful.
Well, we don't have an exclusive franchise on neo-fascist corporate judges. We have 5 of them on the U.S. Supreme Court, possibly 6. So some of these Brits can also be as asinine and as pro-military and pro-corporatist and anti-human life as anybody in this country. And this guy apparently happens to be one.
Well, the timing of the judge's ruling indicates that it was certainly timed propitiously for the. For the right wing, number one.
Sure.
And number two, the fact that he had to stretch so far. If I only picked one of the 9 points at random, I didn't know which point I was picking. It just seemed like polar bear drowning was
polar bears drowning.
Any other, you know. So I went ahead and looked up this, and within a few minutes, I shot his argument full of holes. So, you know, it seems to me that if the judge had to reach that far to make to call it a lie. And something that children have to be protected against, by God.
Right.
You know, then it shows how good the movie really was.
Bruce, it's insane. It's just utterly, absolutely insane.
It is.
I'm like you. I'm trapped in something, and I just want out. Bruce, let me let you go. I appreciate
you
checking
in,
Bill. All right, take care. Oh God. Oh. Stick around, I'm Mike Malloy.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirts? You will find the piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around
money again on research to help find breakthroughs for battery technologies that will enable you to drive a plug-in hybrid battery.
Well, I can't wait.
From the field that this ain't exactly real.
Again, I just feel like I have to mention one more time, thanks to the 70-plus people who got together with Kathy and the kid and me and went on a trip to Mexico for 7 days on a boat. We had a great time. made what I anticipate will be some lasting friendships, although it'll probably be maintained. They'll be maintained via the internet. But we had a great time. We're glad to be back. Let me rephrase that. We had a great time. We had a great time, and I can't wait to do it again. If we get a chance to do it again, I really want to. So next time, let's have 170 instead of just 70. Hell, we ought to rent a whole damn boat. And another couple of days, I've been told, and Kathy and I will stop feeling like we're still on board, rocking and rolling. That boat really, on the way back, it really pitched, and that's a huge ocean liner. And it was pitching about astern, and it just, whoo. But it was great fun, great fun. Jack writes in, Mike, there's an illegal war going on in Iraq, and Anderson Cooper at CNN is doing a story on Larry Craig's wife, who is speaking out, over on MSNBC. They're doing a story on car chases. Unfreaking believable. Yeah, well, I hear you. This is America. This is the United States of America. And we will not allow reality to intrude unless we're part of the 1% of the population that is involved in this war in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're not interested. Not interested. Al is calling from Buffalo, New York, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Al.
Hey, Mike. I'm glad to hear you.
Thank you.
I was just watching a show on Frontline, and the name of the show was Cheney's Law. And I find it hard to believe that this guy can hack up the Constitution and by using executive privilege that is far, I mean, I just can't believe it. I mean, it's like I'm lost in this country. I mean, I thought we did all our fighting in the 60s and 70s. But, I mean, it seems like people are going to be out in the streets pretty soon if this stuff really got out. And I just wanted your take on it. You know, I think Cheney's more behind the war than anybody else, and he kind of led Bush by the nose.
Well, you know, Bush is such a dumbass and a totally ignorant little man who has never had never done a single thing in his life that didn't require people to come and bail him out. He couldn't even go testify before the 9/11 Commission, not under oath, without Dick Cheney there to hold his hand. I don't know who's the evil voice behind the throne. Cheney to a certain extent, but Cheney speaks for corporate America. That's the only people he speaks for, the only entities that he speaks for, corporate America. The country is slipping so fast into a corporatist / fascist state that I'm really beginning to wonder if there's any way to pull it out short of using Thomas Jefferson ideas. I don't know. That's all I can say, Al.
The way I look at it is I bleed blue. I'm a liberal, a Democrat. I'm more proud now than ever I've been before. And I'm getting to think that I'm a better American than he is, and he's the vice president.
Well, of course you're a better American. What? You say that again?
I think I'm a better American than Cheney, okay? And I'm a liberal. I bleed blue. And I'm a Democrat.
Well, of course you are. Any one of those three makes you better than this subhuman android that is Dick Cheney. Any one of those three. The fact that you are all three at the same time makes you three times the human being that he is.
Well, I just can't believe how he's getting away with cutting up the Constitution. And I think it would be one of these issues to push a little bit more. I mean, yeah. If there was an impeachment, he'd be next in line, so... You know, I'm not really kind of for any kind of impeachment or anything, but I just wish everybody would know.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, Al, thanks. I appreciate appreciate you checking in. Take care. The Democrats wouldn't do it, so Vladimir Putin has to do it. Putin was in Tehran, and he told a summit of five Caspian Sea nations in Iran that any use of military force in that region was unacceptable. And in a declaration, the countries agreed that none of them would allow their territories to be used as a base for launching military strikes against any of the others. Thanks, George. You little rat bastard, you. Now Putin and Ahmadinejad have formed. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, how are the right-wing cockroaches on radio and television going to spin this one? Huh? Putin said, quote, we should not even think of making use of force in this region. We are saying that no Caspian nation should offer its territory to third powers for use of force or military aggression against any Caspian state. End quote. Ooh, gee, doesn't that sound like the preamble to the NATO declaration? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Back in the USSR. You don't know how lucky you are, boys. Back in the USSR. Been away so long, I hardly knew the place. Gee, it's good to be back home. Leave it till tomorrow to unpack my case. Honey, disconnect the phone. I'm back in the USSR.
I haven't given up on Russia. I still think Russia understands that it's in her interest to be West.
More nations have nuclear weapons, and still more have nuclear aspirations.
So, of course, Vlad and Mahmoud get together and say, in the kind of language that used to be reserved for relations between China and the Soviet Union directed towards the United States, now it's Iran and Russia directed towards the United States for the same reasons. Putin's own political and hegemonic ambitions that are bumping up against the same where it concerns U.S. imperialism. The New York Times says, Mr. Putin's comments and the declaration come at a time when France and the United States have refused to rule out military action to halt Iran's nuclear program, which they believe is focused on nuclear weapons. The comments were also a strong message that Russia objects to any American military presence in other Caspian Sea states. So I wonder if Bush still feels that Putin is his soul brother. The only way that Putin and Bush were soul brothers, and Bush's addled little messed up, coked out brain, were that they both want to be dictators, both of them. Putin has figured out how to do it under the Russian Constitution. He's going to run for office and then become prime minister. You see, we don't have that kind of system here, but Bush will figure something out. Or not Bush, but his handlers. Okay, Cheney's handlers or something. I don't know. Mr. Putin arrived in Tehran today for strategic meetings with Iran and the leaders from three other nearby Caspian Sea nations that have rich oil and gas resources. He was the first Kremlin leader to travel to Iran since 1943. Wow. The main reason for the trip is ostensibly the meeting in Tehran of nations that border the Caspian Sea, including the leaders of Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, and Turkmenistan. They discussed the division of the Caspian Sea resources, particularly oil, among the five coastline states. See, the oil companies, and that includes the oil company that owns Putin, who in turn owns Russia, and the oil companies that own the United States and in turn own this little piglet in the White House, the oil companies are becoming wealthy beyond language to describe it. Where is oil now? $86 a barrel. What was it the last year of the Clinton administration? 11? $86 a barrel. Have the costs gone up to extract oil? No. Has the cost of equipment that is used to extract oil gone up? No, not really. It's the same equipment. If it's gone up, it's a function of inflation. Well, what has changed? Nothing? except the death grip that the oil companies have on consumers like you and moi? Oh, God. All right, let's do some phone calls. $88 a barrel. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. This is from Reuters. Oil thundered to a new peak above $88 a barrel on Tuesday as investors eyeing supply concerns and tensions in northern Iraq extended the $9 rally that started last week. The administration of President George W. Bush said prices were now too high for the world's top oil consumer. That would be us. Which is already facing economic pressure from the meltdown in the subprime mortgage market. White House Press Secretary Dana Perino said, "There's no doubt that energy prices are too high. They disproportionately hurt low-income families that have to spend so much of the money on energy. We watch it closely. We're very concerned." U.S. crude settled up $1.48 at $87.61 a barrel. London Brent rose to $84.16 a barrel. Blah, 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 blah. George Bush and the Republican Party are destroying not just the United States, but the entire planet. Aren't they, huh? This is what it looks like. Not with a bang, but a whimper. And according to an interview with Spiegel Online, not the catalog, but the German newspaper, Gabriel Kalko, military historian, Amsterdam-based military historian, talks about the prospect of war with Iran and argues that many in the U.S. military now view the White House as being, quote, out of control. Just the first sentence and the first question and first answer. You can find this at truthout.org. Truthout.org. Many in the U.S. military think Bush and Cheney are out of control, is the headline. Spiegel Online says, Mr. Kalko, editorials in U.S. papers like the Wall Street Journal, the Weekly Standard, and the National Review are pushing for military action against Iran. How does the leadership of the U.S. military view such a conflict? Gabriel Kalko. The American military is stretched to the limit. They are losing both wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Everything is being sacrificed for these wars. Money, equipment in Asia, American military power globally, etc. Where and how can they fight yet another? The Pentagon is short of money for procurement, and that is what so many people in the military bureaucracy live for. The situation will be far worse in the event of a war with Iran. Many in the American military have learned the fundamental dilemma of modern warfare. More money and better weapons doesn't mean that you win. IEDs, which cost so little to make, are defeating a military which spends billions of dollars per month. IEDs are so adaptable that each new strategy developed by the United States to counter them is answered by the Iraqi insurgents. The Israelis were also never quite able to counter IEDs. One report quotes an Israeli military engineer who said the Israeli answer to IEDs was frequently the use of armored bulldozers to effectively rip away the top 18 inches of pavement and earth where explosive devices might be hidden. This is fantastic, as the cost of winning means destroying roads, which form the basis of a modern economy. And then this. Spiegel Online. Are the people in the Pentagon getting nervous about how influential voices in the White House continue to push for conflict with Iran? Kalko. Many in the U.S. military think Bush and Cheney are out of control. They are rebelling against Bush and Cheney. Washington Post reporter Dana Priest recently said in an interview that it was believed that the U.S. military would revolt and refuse to fly missions against Iran if the White House issued such orders. Man, oh man, oh man, oh man. Let's go to your phone calls. Chris is calling from Indianapolis, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Hey, how's it going tonight?
It's going.
I just wanted to have a battle of wits with you, but I see you've come unarmed. So I will try it another way. Let me ask you this. How tall are you?
How tall am I?
Yeah.
How tall do I sound? Jesus, get rid of this guy. Dump him. $899-1480. Jesus, God, where do these animals come from? Jim is calling from Oxford, North Carolina, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going fine.
Yeah, I was calling about the oil prices being the way they are. And it seems to me that in 2000, when Mr. Bush was running for president, that he said he'd get his friends, the Saudis, to open the spigot when it was at $25 a barrel.
Sure he did. One of his many half-ass lies, yeah.
Yeah, why doesn't his friends call him on that? Apparently they're making too much money in the stock market, I guess.
My answer, Jim, is that's what his friends told him to say. His friends are the oil company people who put him in office. And the ones who have pressed for this war to hold the Iraqi oil off the market to drive prices sky high. It's not that they want to control oil. They just want to control the price of oil.
They're doing a hell of a job at it.
Aren't they? They don't give a damn about oil, the oil companies. What they care about is the price of oil. If they can drive up the price of oil, then they become filthy wealthy, which is what has happened. ExxonMobil is showing profits unprecedented in the history of the human race. And
see their quarterly profits this
year. Oh, Jesus, they're probably doctored. You know, these are thieves. These are people, the people who run these oil companies in a different time, a different place, would have been taken out behind the Kremlin or the Great Wall of China, and bullets would have been put in the backs of their heads like this. Until they all were dead. That's how it works in a totalitarian society, and that's what Bush is pushing here. Only the people to get the in the back of the head are not the oil company executives, but people who point out what they're doing.
Yeah.
But you know that.
Yeah, well, I just thought I'd call it and voice my opinion.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate
it. Good talking to you, Mike.
All right, man. Take care. Take care. Oh, my God. What did that little twit say? He wanted to fight me for a battle of the wits, but I only came half-armed. Jesus Christ, when did I first hear that? Oh, that's right, seventh grade. Ah! We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Now I ain't no fan of Saddam Hussein. Oh, please don't get me wrong. If it's freeing the Iraqi people you're after, then why have we waited so long? Why didn't we sort this out last time? Was he less evil then than he is now? The stock market holds the answer to why him, why here, why now? 'Cause it's all about the price of oil. It's all about the price.
What I think the president ought to do is he ought to get on the phone with the OPEC cartel and say, we expect you to open your spigots.
Yeah, okay. We expect you to open your spigots. We expect you to open your spigots. We expect you to open your spigots. That's what I'd tell them. I'd tell them that right away. Yes, I would. To the guy, I want to know how tall I am. Tall enough to stomp your ass into the ground. That's how tall I am. Like I would smash a bug. A bug. a roach bug, as we say here in the South, a roach bug. Back to your phone calls. Gerald is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, Gerald.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, fine. I want to give a shout out and a prayer out to Randy Rose. Hope she gets better.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it'll work out when you fall down and hurt yourself. It was amazing to me how quickly that story just went absolutely berserk today, but, you know.
It's like it was silent for a long time until Liberal Radio, talk radio brought it out, and everybody kind of jumped on it. But anyway, what I called about is I wish we had somebody like Al Gore in there who wanted to bring us to alternative fuels, Methane, wind power and all these different things, because he hates the global warming. Had he been our president, we would be way farther along in technology and not using fossil fuels, and we never would have stopped Saddam from putting his oil on the market, so they wouldn't have cornered the market on oil.
Well, yeah, I think, Gerald, somebody like Al Gore, who has very clear ideas about, this global warming catastrophe that we're dealing with now, would have been and still may be the best kind of leader for the country. Thanks, Gerald. I'm going to do some serious thinking just for me. It has nothing to do with your decision, anybody's decision. It's just mine. Some serious thinking over the next few days or a couple of weeks about Al Gore candidacy. I'm about 2 inches away from throwing everything I have on my little toy radio program here behind his candidacy and try my damnedest to give as much publicity to that idea as I possibly can. I don't think there's anybody. I think Jimmy Carter said this today, too. I've been saying this for weeks. So, President Carter, thank you. Carter said today or the other day or a couple of days ago that there is nobody in the United States more qualified to be president than Al Gore. And, like I say, we've been saying that for a long time, we being Kathy and or me on this program. I know a lot of people still see Al Gore as being the architect of this or the person who did that and so on and so forth. And what I like is the right wingers now are talking about Al Gore's blind trust that has some shares of Occidental Petroleum in it, or did have. I don't know what's still there. I'm sure Al Gore is completely aware now, as he was not aware 10, 15, 20 years ago. Hell, I have a trust from my grandfather. It probably has oil stocks in it, right, Kathy? And there's nothing I can do about it, absolutely nothing. Except wait until everybody's dead, and if I'm still alive, that trust is dissolved. So it's amazing to me the way the right wing in this country just goes bananas about Al Gore, and I think Krugman hit it today. The Gore derangement syndrome is they know that their entire party, their entire point of view, their fakey little president and their vicious android vice president, all of it is illegitimate. All of it stinks. The stench of this Republican Party is befouling the entire planet. Every single person, organization, or a publication that supports anything that has anything to do with Republicans or conservatives at this point in global history is a murderer, a soul murderer, a child killer. A rapist of the planet, a destroyer of women. You people who support anything Republican or conservative, whether it's here or in some other country, at this point in global history, you people are killers. You are absolute killers. If I had a button on this desk in front of me that I could push and make you all disappear, trust me, I would push it. Just vile. Vile human beings. And you and I have to breathe the same air as these pigs. Unbelievable. So I, just from my own personal point of view, I'm getting very, very close to, in my own head and on this program, just saying Al Gore is the one for me. given the circumstances and given his knowledge and understanding. All right, your phone calls when we come back. Nothing but your phone calls. Stick around. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. How tall are you? I'm tall enough to stomp your ass. That's how tall I am. Stay with us. Mike Molloy on Nova M. Seven past the hour. Welcome back. Let's go right back to your phone calls. My name is Mike Molloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Matt is calling from Louisiana, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm okay. I have a few things to talk about, but with just as I told your screener, the demise of the legal system in the United States, or even public discourse about something, is ranging from either why there were no even attempted prosecutions of 9/11 in Manhattan, or why the FBI would have jurisdiction in a supposedly sovereign Iraq to study the you know, the Blackwater incident. I don't understand why in the media that never even gets asked. You know, those very simple questions. Maybe there's an answer. I can't imagine what it is.
Well, there's probably a lot of answers, but the answer to why it doesn't get discussed in media is because most media, with a few exceptions in this country, are controlled by corporate America, and that sort of discussion is not to be allowed. In fact, in so many cities around the country, the differing opinions are being eliminated. KLSD in San Diego is one of those. They carry Air America programming. They also carry my show, which is not Air America. It is Nova M, but it's being shut down. Now, it's not just San Diego. It's not just KLSD. It's happening all over the country. So the answer to your question, why doesn't the media report it, is because media have an interest in not reporting it. If they had an interest in reporting it, they would. But
Do you think they know their market so well? I mean, truly,
No. Media do not care about their market. They care about their profit.
Right.
So it doesn't make any difference. San Diego, for example, I hate to keep going back to San Diego. I could use any number of cities that have almost completely eliminated any kind of dissenting point of view on radio. Hell, here in Atlanta is a good example. There are huge markets and populations that are interested in hearing something other than this right-wing drivel. But
right.
It doesn't make any difference to the corporations, the seven corporations that control about 96% of American media, whether it's television, radio, newspapers. They don't give a damn about serving parts of their audience. They only care about a profit. That's it.
So what's the answer?
I'm sorry?
What's the answer, Mike? What would you do if you were czar?
What would I do? I would undo.
So what can we do as Americans?
I would undo the signing off on the Fairness Doctrine, which occurred in the Reagan years, and the consolidation plan that occurred in the Clinton years. These were two major mistakes made by two very charismatic presidents who apparently felt they could do any goddamn thing they wanted to do, Reagan and Clinton. And they both did it. And as a result of their actions, we are at a point, you know, I don't care how many times Bill Clinton stands up there and decries about how unfair it all is, media attacking his wife and so on and so forth. It is his responsibility that it's at this point. Bill Clinton could have vetoed the Consolidation Act, but he did not, because Bill Clinton was being paid off in terms of corporate support to go ahead and allow media in this country, the only occupation protected by the Constitution, to be run by a pack of two-bit whores. So every time I hear Bill Clinton talk about how he doesn't like the fact that his wife or the liberals or the Democrats don't get a fair shake in media, I could just scream at him, "Well, you hypocritical bastard, you're the one that signed the bill." So, Matt, that's the best answer I can give to you. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. It's not going to change, folks, unless and until the American public finally says, we've had enough. Now, I don't know what that's going to take. A general nationwide strike. I've been talking about that for 5 years. Now, I understand there's an effort now being put together. I had the link. I don't have it right now. For Election Day 07, what would be Election Day 07, which is coming up November 7th of this year. For everybody to just stop. That's all. Just stop. Don't buy anything. Don't go anyplace. Just stop. Now, what do you think the chances are? By God, if this thing develops, I will not come to work on that day. I'll declare it right goddamn now. I won't be here. I will not be here on November 7th if there is some support to make this happen. Now, what makes you think the American public is ready for a general strike? We're not French. We're not from the former Soviet state of Georgia. We're not South Koreans. These are people, when they've had enough, they stop. We don't stop. We don't care how many people die in Iraq. We don't care how much environmental degradation goes on. We don't care how badly the housing market is collapsing around our ears, or the dollar is going in the toilet. We don't care. We just keep going and going and going and going. Let me buy something today. Let me do something today. Let me go someplace. Let me buy something today. Let me do something today. Let me go someplace. Let me buy something. Let me buy something. Let me buy something. Let me buy something. When's it going to stop? When the American people make it stop. They cannot unleash Blackwater on 300 million of us. They cannot unleash the United States military on 300 million of us. When the time comes that we've had enough, then we will have had enough. How simple does that have to be? We're not at that point yet. We want more abuse. We want more constitutional guarantees stripped away. We want more totalitarianism. We want more corporatism. And for Christ's sake, leave me alone. I'm trying to buy something. We're not interested. Let the slaughter continue. Let the lies continue. Let it keep going on and on and on and on. When will it stop? When 300 million Americans say, I've had it. That's it. Now, it doesn't take 300 million, because 28% of those are right-wing Republican jackasses who will do anything to keep this charade going. But the other 72% of us, when we have had enough, we can make it stop. And not 1 second before. Martin Luther King Jr. laid out the plan, the Montgomery bus boycott, and by God, it stopped. We're not ready for it. The average American, that's you, and that's me, we're not ready for it. We want more of this. More of this crap. But We've been emasculated as a people. We've been told over and over and over again that there's nothing we can do. We don't have the power. We have demonstrations and the media don't cover it. We have demonstrations and 100,000 people out of 300 million show up. We have been told over and over and over again. These rat bastard right-wingers have blanketed this country with lies and BS for the past 12 years, coast to coast, border to border, on and on and on without let-up, to the point where you have a huge percentage, minority, but a huge percentage of people who believe they can't do anything. And all you have to do, all I have to do, all any of us have to do is just stop. Think about that. Isn't that simple? Just stop. Just wake up November 7th and say, think I'm going to call in sick. Think I'm not going to drive my vehicle. I'm not going to let my kid go to school. I'm not going to go to the grocery store. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to stop because my country is being turned into a totalitarian, right-wing, fascist crap hole, and I don't want it to continue. So when we're ready to make it stop, it will stop, and not 1 second before we're ready.
Open your eyes, time to wake up. Enough is enough, is enough, is enough. Have I been sleeping? I've been so still, afraid of crumbling. Have I been careless, dismissing all the distant rumblings? Take me where I am supposed to be.
We've just seen the first war of the 21st century, and there's universal approval of the statements I have made, and I'm confident there will be universal approval of the actions this government takes.
Two past the hour.
And as a child.
Back to your phone calls. Phil is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Mike. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I love that rant you just had. It sounded like that cruise did you some good. You got cruise control there.
No, I just, there's no escaping anything. I mean, you know, you can go a cruise to the moon and come back, and, you know, nothing's changed. That was a great breather. It was nice to get away and spend some time with the 70-some people who were just absolutely delightful. But you come back, you never really go anywhere, you know. I mean, you're not gone. You're just gone mentally for a while, you know, watching the boat tilt forward and aft and, you know, watching your kid, your three-year-old say, ¿Cómo está? Muy bien. Me llamo Molly. You know, and all the local folks being very impressed that this little blonde white child can speak some Spanish. But when you come back, it's all the same. Right, Phil?
Well, that soundbite that, you know, like led you in, the universal appeal that Shrub said, it's like, what universe is he on? I mean,
I hear you.
To me, it's like supposedly he saw the Dalai Lama today. God, I wonder how that went.
Yeah, Bush meeting the Dalai. You've got to have the deepest, and I do, the deepest respect for this holy man, this Dalai Lama. And I'm an atheist, full blown. But, you know, to see somebody who can walk this earth the way His Holiness does and not be corrupted and approach a monument of human evil like George W. Bush and not be consumed in flames, that is very impressive to me. So I have great respect for the Dalai Lama.
Yeah, because, I mean, probably Shrub is going to make a joke out of it. Probably tomorrow he'll probably tell everybody, hey, man, guess what I said? I said, hello, Dolly. That's his, you know, sense of humor. It's like,
oh, geez.
It's so.
Yeah, you're so right. That is probably what the twit will say. Oh, my God.
I wanted to ask you, because what you said in the beginning really made me feel so much more enriched and made me feel empowered, because you said about, I don't know if it was General Sanchez, but it was something to do with that the military would not go along with Shrub to do his dirty work, you know, our military. Just basically say, hey, man, what are you going to do? Take all 170,000 of us or 200,000 of us and put us in the brig? You know, it's like basically just turn on this creep. You know, it's, I just.
Well, there is, from everything I've been able to read and find out about, and it's very, very hush-hush, very behind the scenes and out the stage door and, you know, where you and I are not supposed to see it. But everything I can get my liberal hands on seems to indicate that there is a cadre of high-ranking officers within the United States military who understand fully that the Bush crime family is utterly and absolutely destroying the U.S. military and trying to replace it with these private contractors like DynCorp and Blackwater there's several of them. And I think that there is, at the highest levels within the military, people who are saying, no, I don't think they're interested in power. They're not interested in government. They're interested in what their oath dictated, and that is that they're here to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. I have to believe that that's the case, because were it not the case, Phil, then I think we already, this son of a bitch Cheney and the pigs around him would have ordered a tactical so-called nuclear strike against Iran already. And I do believe, I've got to believe, that there is a cadre of U.S. military officers of the highest rank who are acting as a check against the destructive insanity that this Bush administration is perpetrating against everybody.
It's good to hear that Putin is standing up against this Shrub, you know, about doing anything to Iran, you know. It's like,
yeah, don't you wish, though, it was the Democrats who were standing up against,
oh, God, yeah,
against Bush and not the leader of Russia? I mean, oh, Jesus, wouldn't that be wonderful if the Democrats, the opposition a party, the majority party now, that has the backing of 70% of the American public, and all the political money is flowing to the Democrats, wouldn't it be wonderful that instead of Putin standing up, it would be the Democrats? Yeah, that'll happen. Phil, I got to go. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Mike It's about 25 before the hour. A couple emails on this general strike idea. AE writes, Mike, there would be no general strike in this nation until we're ready to lay down our own lives for a good cause instead of just thanking the troops for their service in a bad cause. And we're not ready yet. And Leslie writes, Mike, you're exactly right in regards to what is going on right now. You were right about the American public not being ready for it to stop as we keep buying and ignoring, etc. I think the problem hindering people from getting out there and making it stop is the media. I know, you know that. But a lot of people don't seem to. People are disconnected and disjointed more today than ever before, I think. The news that is in the media is too depressing to watch, and it doesn't seem to report issues of true importance, so why watch what is either too depressing or too pointless? I get my information from the Internet. I can choose what I want to read and know about, and the entertainment on television these days is mostly garbage anyway, but my point is how damn ironic it is that we live in a day and age where we have email, cell phones, Internet, are more connected than ever, yet completely disjointed by our media, and we are crippled by fears. I guess the real point is it is going to take everyone, literally everyone, to get out and protest so the media can't possibly ignore it. Because a big hindrance to preventing change from coming about is immediate. It needs to get back to reporting what is really important. Leslie. I hear you, Leslie, but it's never going to. Mainstream media will never go back. And the question is, why should they? I just read something that $3 billion is going to be spent on political advertising by these various candidates. $3 billion. Why should media ever report the truth about anything? Why should they? What's to be gained by that? And I'm not being a cynic. I'm just telling the truth. What is to be gained by media corporations presenting a balanced point of view, or telling the truth, or getting the stories that are real and important to how we live our lives? There's no reason for them to do that when they can have Anderson Cooper on 360 talk interview this poor miserable bastard Larry Craig and his long suffering wife. I mean, who in the name of God cares about Larry Craig and his wife? Who cares about car chases, which I believe somebody's told me was on MSNBC tonight? Who cares? Nobody cares, but people watch it. Why do they watch it? Because they do. So what does CNN and MSNBC do? Well, we're getting a certain market share, and we can charge a certain amount for advertising. That's all we care about. We don't give a damn about reporting those things necessary to the survival of this country, our people, this planet. And besides, we can't report it anyway because we are all owned by corporate entities that are antithetical to the continuation of human life. They don't care. So there is no way. Will somebody please get this, will all of us please get this through our collective skulls, our noggins? Media are not going to change. Ever. Mainstream media. It's not going back to the bad old days or the good old days, depending on your point of view. It's not. How do you unpass consolidation? What do you do? Do you go back to what was attempted in the 1890s around the turn of the 19th century and break up the oil, break up Standard Oil? Standard Oil is back together. You can't break up. You can't uninvent the nuclear bomb. They have to be bypassed, media do. They have to be ignored. Let them wallow in their own bile. Let them wallow in their own body fat. Let them just degenerate and die. But don't think that it can be undone. Reagan and Clinton made sure forever, that an independent competitive media is dead. It's gone. Get used to it, truth seeker. I know it's a cliche, be your own media. You got a better idea? The resources are there. Be your own media. Interconnect. Organize. And bring an end to this. But if you're going to sit back, if I'm going to sit back and wait for so-called mainstream media to lead me or to report on me or to show me which direction to go, then I'm going to be doing that until I rot and my children rot and my grandchildren rot and the whole goddamn planet rots. It's not going to happen that way. As the record says, as Chumbawamba says, time to wake up. Time to wake up. Enough is enough. Is enough. Is enough. Huh? You think? Nah, not yet. No, not yet. Back to your phone call. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California, listening on the internet. Hey, Sanchez.
Senor Baloy, buenas noches to you.
Buenas noches a tu.
Muy bien. Wow, you did pick up a little Spanish while you were down there.
Un poquito.
Well, muy bien, muy bien. You're reading my mind, man. This segment and the segment before where you were talking about the media is exactly what and where I wanted to take this conversation.
Yeah.
May I refer back to the old black and white version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Sure.
There is a particular scene I think you might remember. It's the scene where where Carolyn Jones, the character that Carolyn Jones plays,
yeah.
And they realize by they shaking her and her, and she's asleep, they realize at that point that, oh my God, they got her.
They got her.
And that is the point that the American media has most of the sheeple in this country at. Originally, when I presented this to Ian, I was going to present it as, like, within the past 3 weeks, and I know you were gone last week, so, you know, you don't know about it, but the prior 2 weeks, man, all they seem to be talking about is Iran. Iraq has just virtually, off the network news and all the consumerism-type programs, has virtually disappeared. Other than discussing Blackwater, which the progressive radio networks took, and they're discussing our, you know, the loss of our rights and all of that stuff, the Iraqi occupation, correction, has virtually vanished at this point.
Do you know
point.
Why?
Please elaborate, please.
In my opinion, from having worked in news, it's a dead story. It's an old story. It's 5 years old.
Correct.
Who cares? You can't put music to it anymore.
Correct.
You can't put waving American flags. Been there, done that.
Correct.
It's old news. Let's have a new war, new death, new destruction. Let's get away from Arabic and into Farsi. Let's get away from Iraqis and into Iranians.
Correct.
We need excitement. We need bombs falling. We need places blowing up. We don't need to see busted cars and dead children. We don't watch dead children anyway. We want more. We want more. We want more. That's what media is about. Give me more. Give me more. Give me more. It's an old story, Sanchez. It's almost 5 years old. World War II didn't take that long from the bombing of Pearl Harbor to the nuking of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It's an old story. Media want no part of it.
Exactly. The sheeple are getting bored at this point, and they realize that the sheeple are addicted to the warm glow of the television. So that's what it is. They'll turn it on, and at this point, like Carolyn Jones, they're asleep, and they're just basically watching anything at this point. I can't have a coherent conversation with anybody on the street anymore about Iraq because they don't even know what's going on, and this is worrisome to me that now. I had a chance. I was talking, Jeff Farias had Scott Ritter on last week, and I had a chance to call in and talk to Scott Ritter.
Uh-huh.
And basically, if I can use an odd analogy, we're in this, like, airport shuttle bus. And instead of going to the airport, Bush and the neocons have hijacked us, and we're on our way to, like, the Grand Canyon. We're about to go over that little ledge. And Ritter was going, basically, you know, his feelings are that the American country, the sheeple are going to have to get their asses kicked before they wake up. You know, it's very troublesome to hear things like that.
But I know.
You know, what do you do at this point? What alternative do we have? I refuse to believe that we're going to bomb Iran. I see no benefit in something like that. But yet everybody, thanks to the media, are convinced that, like, there's something to bomb there. So,
well, not anymore, because Putin has warned anyone who's paying attention, including the psychopathic Dick Cheney and his toadstool David Addington, Putin has said, you know, you come over here and attack any of these countries, and it's going to be your ass.
Mm-hmm.
In simple terms, that's what he said. And don't forget, Putin still has thousands mm-hmm. of nuclear-tipped ICBMs mm-hmm. that would take a couple of twists of a couple of dials. Okay, half of them are rusted and rotted, and they'll explode on the launching pad, but
yeah.
the rest of them will make it
yeah.
to Chicago and Atlanta and Detroit and Long Beach and,
mm-hmm.
and San Francisco and New York.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes somebody like Putin,
mm-hmm.
who is as much of a psychopathic dictator as Bush, to say to his counterpart over here, don't come over here, don't come over here, or we will kill you.
All right.
Very simple. Thanks,
yep.
Sanchez.
Okay.
All right, buenas noches.
We've got a Sanchez.
Okay, bye-bye. We'll be back after the break.
Bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say?
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, and Catherine Bay for the program tonight. Appreciate it. And also many thanks to Johnny Wendell, Sam Cedar, and Peter Werby for taking over this program while we were on the Truth Seeker cruise. And thanks to the 70-some people who came along on that cruise. It was a hell of a week, folks. It was just really, really pretty wonderful. Thanks to everybody. We'll do that again sometime. This is from Al in Rochester. He writes, last summer I attended a lecture by Dr. Robert Bowman, Air Force Colonel, former head of the Star Wars program. He said with assurance that should Bush or Cheney or both order an attack on Iran, the Air Force would stand down and refuse to carry out the strikes. Yeah, I'm familiar with Dr. Bowman. As a matter of fact, have interviewed him on air a couple of times. I guess the last time was a long time ago, but I hope that's true. There has to be a high level of U.S. military officers who understand how totally psychopathic this administration is in the grand scheme of things and would refuse, especially given the fact that they've ordered this country into two wars when a police action would have been sufficient to have captured the people who, if you believe the official story, carried out the attacks against this country on September 11, 2001. If you don't believe the official story, like I don't, then you're kind of left with spinning your head around like Linda Blair in The Exorcist. So, I don't know, but I hope Dr. Robert Bowman is correct. I have no reason to believe he's not. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing? Have a good time?
I had a great time.
You're not eating or drinking anything, are you?
Yeah.
Well, put it down.
Okay.
I don't want you to spit up.
Oh, you mean right now?
This minute.
No, I've got a cold cup of coffee here. Wait, hold on. There, it set it down. Go ahead.
Okay. I happened to catch a glimpse of one Eric Prince being sworn in to testify before Congress.
Yeah.
And with his hand up in the air, I looked at him. I said, oh, my God. He looks just like Ollie North.
Bingo. Yeah, we talked about that before we left, Marge.
Oh,
but geez. That's okay, because I know it's difficult, if not impossible, for you to hear the program. But I noticed the same thing. Didn't he? He looked like Ali North's little brother.
Exactly. You know, and then he's on with Charlie Rose, and he's talking about Blackwater being a detailed temp agency. God almighty.
Yeah, right. Oh,
I'll tell you true, though. Tonight I was watching Frontline.
Yeah.
Everybody, and I mean everybody, has got to get a copy of that and watch it. The title of the show tonight was Cheney's Law. Cheney's Law. Uh-huh. And that's exactly what he thinks he's got. The whole United States, you know, not just the government, but the whole of the United States by the short hairs, and he's going to do as he damn well please and give all the powers to the president. Do you remember, I know you've got it on record somewhere, of Bush walking across the portico of the White House saying it would be a whole lot easier
yes.
if I was dictator?
Yes. Yes, we have that.
Oh, God in heaven's name. You know, there was another thing that they mentioned tonight. You know, he signed so many laws or whatever, and he also signed what they called hundreds, mark you, of signing statements,
which
in essence, you know, negated every damn thing he signed.
Yeah, Bush has signed more signing statements than all previous 42 presidents combined.
And I know he signed, well, as of February this year, 226 executive orders.
Right.
Nobody knows what the hell's in those either.
No, and the question, I think it's a good question, are they going to turn all this over to Hillary Clinton?
Well, the one thing he hasn't gotten so far, at least I don't think so, not anything that is not secret, is the line item veto. I mean, geez.
Well, I'm like you, Marge. I can only carry the thought so far, and then I run out of words. And I just
and this guy, Addington, you talk about a nest of vipers.
Isn't it so?
Boy, it boggles the mind.
And confuses the mind, too.
Well, that, too. I mean, what the hell can I tell you?
Marge, thanks for checking and behave yourself.
Yeah, well, yeah, you too. I'm glad you had a good time and didn't come back with anything more... in a suntan.
All right. Thanks, Marge. Take care. Yeah, all those rumors put out there by, I don't know who, the five-star hotels that if you travel into the interior of places like, I don't know, pick a country. I know, Mexico. What state were we in, Kathy? Jalisco? South, I guess it's south along the coast of Puerto Vallarta, and just we had rented a car one day, and we just said let's go as far as we can go and still be back on board ship by 7 o'clock. And we drove way up into the mountains and found a little village and stopped for something to eat, and it was fabulous. And Molly had a good time, and for $1 apiece bought some of the, or was yeah 10 pesos apiece, bought some of those little bobble-headed creatures that are so cute. Thanks for participating in the program tonight. However you did that, I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.